Tonight, we'll preview the amazing show you can see at the United Center as the circus is in town. Then we'll talk about women's health. And finally, Pretty Late favorite Elliot Serrano ride sidecar. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
You're listening Pretty Late, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And first of all, let me say that Elliot had signed up to do tonight's show a while ago. And then I told him we were going to have a gynecologist, a doctor on to talk about women's health. And he said, I'll be at the Billy Goat. And we did a little bit of shifting. And now you are here for the beginning of the show. And I've decided to hit this topic right out of the gate. Is that all right?
Yeah. And
why am I asking if it's all right? It's my show, Dr. Stryker, right?
Whatever you want. And Elliot, I mean, did you want your gynecologist to come on? Is that why you're
Oh,
here?
Wow.
No, boy, yeah.
There we go. It already went that way. Well, this is actually timely. We talked a little bit off the air about some of the things, and I didn't get a chance to ask you about this, if you were comfortable talking about reproductive rights, because this week the Supreme Court is going to make decisions, or at least hear arguments about clinics in Texas that perform abortions. There was a study that said that the number of women who have tried performing abortions on themselves is in the high six figures.
Yes, it is so terrifying what is going on in Texas, and not just Texas, someone all over this country. And I think what bothers me the most, because of course, when it comes to reproductive rights, I am, you know, so totally in favor of a woman's right to choose is between her and her physician. Let's get the politicians out of our uteruses
Please.
And out of our bedrooms.
So crowded.
But I think what scares me the most is when I talk to young women and they don't seem particularly concerned. And there's this complacency about that they will always have this right to choose.
Because it's always been there for them.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I also think that there's this idea among a lot of people that if women are responsible and if they use birth control, that they won't ever need an abortion. And I wish that was the case. But first of all, we know that 50% of the pregnancies in this country are not planned, and that they are a result of women who did use some form of contraception but potentially failed. So many of these pregnancies that occur are not because someone was irresponsible, not to mention there are many desperately desired pregnancies that have gone wrong.
Right. And when you say that, you're talking about medical necessity to terminate a pregnancy.
Absolutely.
The viability.
Something that's going on with the baby that is truly incompatible with life. Mm-hmm. There are so many situations that are so complex, and this is not political, and it shouldn't be political. And when I watch the debates and I see them talking about this, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, what happened to the separation of church and state? And what happened to the idea that this is something that is between a woman and her doctor? And we've come so far forward when it comes to gay rights and gay marriage and so many other things. And then we're going so far backwards. And what we're seeing, of course, is just what you brought up, that there are women that are desperate and they, you know, you cannot get an abortion in Texas for the most part because there are so many restrictions and there you have to travel so far, and women, as they always have, take matters into their own hands, and it's just sad.
Well, and people will say, life begins. I mean, the governor of Arizona said that how long ago was the legislation? Life begins 2 weeks before conception was the type of.
Are you kidding?
That's what
come on. But you know, the other thing also is the same people that are, you know, they use this phrase right to life, which makes me a little nuts. It's anti-choice, of course. It's not right to life, because if it was right to life, then they would also be concerned about gun control and capital punishment. You know, whose life, which life. So there's that part of it. But let's talk about contraception. You know, the everyone agrees who is pro-choice like I am that abortion should be safe, but it should also be rare. And the way to make it rare is to ensure that we have access to good contraception. Mm-hmm. And the same people that are anti-choice are the same people that are also restricting not only access to contraception, but financial support of contraception.
And this was some of the Supreme Court decision last year when it came to Hobby Lobby, when they and whenever they say, well, I shouldn't have to pay for your birth control is what people were saying. So are we now going to pick and choose what types of medical?
Yes. And Hobby Lobby's not the only one out there. I actually talk a great deal about being a conscientious consumer and knowing where you're spending your money. And I've actually done a little research on that. And you would be shocked how many Hobby Lobbies there are out there. They are not the only ones.
Anything off the top?
The list is very long.
Whatever Whatever you want to throw out there, it's fine.
Of, you know, places that do not support women's reproductive rights, that do not give their women employees the same kind of medical coverage that, that men get.
In which sense? In the sense that there's Viagra or there's...
They don't cover birth control. Right. I mean, we're not even talking birth abortion. We're talking birth control.
Which
so
is
if
medical.
You're not going to cover someone's contraception and then you're going to penalize them for... a pregnancy that occurs as a result of lack of access to contraception, we're in big trouble here. And this is, to me, this isn't just about women's rights. This is about human rights. This is about the ability for individuals to make their own decisions without government stepping in and dictating what they can and can't do with their bodies.
And not just the government, but when Susan Flukey was testifying in front of the Senate, when they were having the hearings about birth control and access through insurance companies, it was amazing how vilified she was and the slut shaming and like things like, you know, the radio show hosts were saying things like, you know, how many pills are you taking? How much are you having sex? And one of the things that she had been talking about, one of the conversations that I think was so, was such a low murmur was contraception isn't necessarily only for birth control, which we talked about before.
That is so important, is that 30% of contraception that's prescribed in this country is prescribed for non-contraceptive purposes.
Yes.
We are talking women that have, you know, not only horribly painful periods, but heavy periods that result in anemia and transfusions. We're talking about treatment of things like menstrual migraines, all kinds of hormonal irregularities, even things like precancerous changes in the uterus. And we know that hormonal contraceptive can protect against things like ovarian cancer and uterine cancer and endometriosis. And the list is very, very long.
Oh,
so,
but
I shouldn't have to explain myself.
No, you
shouldn't have to say to someone,
yes,
I am prescribing this for X reason versus Y reason.
Is there a way to recategorize it then so it's not called birth control or contraception? No, I mean, really.
Well, you're right on.
Hormonal regulation?
I talk about this all the time, that we should think of another phrase to use other than birth control.
Right.
And because, first of all, birth control is not just the pill. Birth control is anything that's used to control pregnancy. So it might be an IUD. It might be a condom. It might be a female condom. It might, you know, there's all kinds of options out there. So I always thought of them as being hormone regulation pills.
Yes.
But that hasn't really caught on.
No.
But I think
and
it's so important.
I want to throw something. And just because it makes me so, it makes me, women's health, I shouldn't be angry about women's health, but lack of progress.
You should be angry.
I'm angry at women's health. Because I support
about
women's
what's
health.
Right.
Yes. In regard, I have
and
to.
Planned Parenthood and, you know.
I have to take a break. I won't throw anything, I promise, Craig, during the break. But this is one of the things that I'm most passionate about. So let me take a break here. And I know that some people are uncomfortable, but this is important. This is your wives, your mothers, your daughters. These are the women in your life who you care about.
Women have had an abortion, and about 90%, if not more, American women have used contraception at some point in their life. So this is everyone. This is not just a few people.
No, this is women. Women's health. More after this on 720. We're talking to Dr. Stryker. So if you're concerned, I know that people just think that I kind of go off the deep end. And no, I'm talking to a professional. So there, Elliot. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And we have with us, well, Elliot Serrano, who's hoping that, we're not turning on you, Elliot. I think you're learning, right, a little bit from Dr. Stryker?
I'm learning way more than I ever thought I would, yes.
Excellent. And off the air, she was telling me that when she goes on television, she is told the limited number of times she's allowed to say the word vagina. And I was telling her that my listeners often call and complain when we say that word, even though I believe, and you can correct me, it's a medical term for a female body part.
Yes, that would be the case.
Yes.
Well, they let you say hoo-ha.
Yes,
hoo-ha,
I can say
vajayjay. Down there, very popular.
Coochie.
Can you say it like Al Pacino?
One of those.
Maybe that'll get by.
Don't you think when we use diminutive terms like that, then it continues to sort of perpetuate the idea that it's not important?
That it's not important, but that worse, that it's shameful.
Shameful. That's
shameful.
Yes.
I mean, I think that's really what it is that women are taught, not all women, of course, but many young girls are taught that they should be ashamed of their genitals, of their vaginas, that they have an odor, that they're not clean. You know, in many parts of the country, douching is just considered to be like brushing your teeth because it's dirty. It smells bad. And this is all part of the vagina shaming, the genital shaming. And this carries through. We still hear about this.
Which is dangerous for a woman's health, because I talk about going to the being in the stirrups. And one of the jokes that I have is that, you know, technology, this is an exam that was invented in 1927. And a lot has happened since then. And I don't know why we don't have an app for the pap. I don't know if you and I can get together on that.
We could work on that.
But women don't go. Because it's humiliating, it's painful, and I had a woman tell me that she had not had one in 11 years until she came to my show and saw that a lot of other women felt the same way, humiliated, and were laughing at the stress of it. And she emailed me and said when she was in the stirrups, she thought of me, and I'll take it. I'll take it every day of the week and twice on Sunday, because women don't go because they're embarrassed by their body parts.
17% of women go to the gynecologist every year. 17%. And this number always shocks people. But the reality is this: most women don't go, not only because they're embarrassed, they might not have coverage, they might not think it's important. But yeah, a lot of it is that they just feel like no one should be looking down there. They certainly don't look down there. Men are inspecting from morning until night. Now, granted, it's a lot easier for them,
but
any time that something pops up on a guy's genitals, you know, a little dot on his penis and he's all over it. Women, they don't look. They don't know. And I cannot tell you how many times someone will come into the office and I'll see something and I'll say, oh, there's this, you know, big thing here. Have you noticed this? Or does this bother you? And they're like, oh, I didn't even know. I hadn't even looked. And that would never happen with a guy.
Wow. 17%.
17%.
Please tell.
And it's getting worse now, because now there's this whole thing about you only need a pap smear every 3 years. And what people don't appreciate is that a pap smear is not the same as a gynecologic exam. And even if you don't have a pap smear, someone still has to look on your vulva and your vagina and your cervix, because if I don't, who's going to?
Yes.
And there are things that we pick up that are separate from the pap smear. And you still have to check your uterus, your ovaries. You are not off the hook if you don't need a pap smear.
And by off the hook, it means a clear bill of health. Talking about is saving lives.
Saving lives, and also just an opportunity to talk about this stuff. You know, one of the things that I'm out there you're just talking about constantly is the fact that no one is having this conversation, because these are taboo topics. And so often when I say to a woman, you know, let's talk about your sex life. Let's talk about the fact that I think you're losing urine. Are you losing urine? And she's like, oh, thank God that you asked me about that, because I did want to talk about it, but I didn't want to be the one to bring it up. So a lot of times
women just accept it as after children or things like that. Yes.
It's so common, but common is not the same as normal. And just because someone is experiencing something doesn't mean that they have to experience it. And so often a woman goes to her doctor and he or she will say, well, this is just a normal part of aging, or this is just the way it goes. And because their doctor hasn't given them a solution, they think there is no solution. And that's actually why I wrote Sex RX, Hormones, Health, and Your Best Sex Ever, because it was with the idea that there are solutions out there for painful sex, for urinary incontinence, for whatever isn't going right in terms of your health. There are things that women can be empowered to act upon and to do, but someone's got to give them the information. Women are smart. You give them good information and they will make good choices.
Right.
But they have to have good information.
And we don't need artificial barriers to access for better.
And there are so many barriers, mm-hmm. so many barriers.
Whether it's shame or insurance, sort of advice that we get, whether we see it on television. The other thing I wanted to talk to you before I let you go is Planned Parenthood. You mentioned off the air that you make donations to Planned Parenthood. And this is something that, for me, when I didn't have health insurance, this is where I went and they had found abnormal cells in my cervix, and I had to have them frozen off and have cryo, and it was painful. But I'll remember for the rest of my life that it cost me $117 when I was in my 20s and didn't have very much money.
That's right.
And that's a life that could be a life saving procedure for somebody to make sure that they are staying ahead of something.
Yeah.
So when people say, one of the people, someone emailed me and said they don't even do mammograms, but they do screenings.
They do breast exams, but they ensure that a woman will get a mammogram. They do more well woman care than anyone else in the United States. And in addition to, of course, providing contraception, they are doing STD screening and they are doing pap smears and they are finding abnormalities. And they do such an extraordinary job with such limited resources. If someone has a dollar at Planned Parenthood, that goes so much further than a dollar, certainly in my office,
right,
or, you know, any other office. They really have just made it available to women. And so many women have your story. Yeah, you look at women who now are successful, who do have insurance, and you say to them, yeah, but did Planned Parenthood ever factor into your life? Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When I was in college, when I was starting out, when I didn't have other resources, they were there for me. They gave me good care. And if I didn't have any money, they made sure I got the right care
Exactly. Anyway.
And that is just gold. And we cannot let that go away in this country.
It is. It's galling to me that people will call it. They want to get rid of Planned Parenthood. They want to defund it. This has come up again and again over the last few years. Obviously, this year in
particular.
These
are not people that care about women. They just don't. And they say that they do. And it's quite frankly offensive.
Where can we find your book?
Everywhere. Sex RX, Hormones, Health, and Your Best Sex Ever on Amazon and bookstores. And I love it when people write about their comments and tell me what they think of it. My website is drstreicher.com. And
let's spell that so people can know.
DrStreicher.
And I need you to come back again.
I would
because this
to.
Is fantastic, as I mentioned.
Lots to talk about.
Lots to talk about.
Important
stuff. Yes. I suspect that if we could, because men are in power politically and financially, mm-hmm. I have always thought that if we tested for testicular cancer the same way we did mammograms, maybe we could move the balls down the field. I don't know what else to say, because it really is appalling to me that they just don't get it.
It's perfect. It's exactly.
You can use it anywhere you want. You don't need any sources from me. You are a remarkable woman, and thank you so much for the work that you do, Dr. Stryker. Again, you're a gynecologist, also OBGYN?
I'm an OBGYN. I'm not delivering babies these days. I am mostly doing menopause, sexual health, hysterectomy, alternatives, hysterectomy, complex gynecology, mm-hmm. and mostly just out here talking to people,
yes.
too, because this is what I really like to do is to get good information to women.
Well, we look forward to having you back. Thank you again for the work that you do and keeping the conversation going and encouraging others to do so. More after this on 720 WGN. Craig, you're a little excited for the circus, aren't you?
I am so excited for the circus.
The circus is in town. Ringling yeah. Brothers and Barnum and Bailey have announced that. Well, they're in town. They're at the United Center this week and next week. And they have announced donation to Rush Children's Hospital in support of ongoing commitment to care for pediatric cancer patients. This is something they're doing in every city. And for every $10,000 they're donating to every market that they are visiting with the circus, they are also giving an additional donation of $10,000 to the Primary Children's Hospital in Salt Lake City, where they're in the middle of groundbreaking cancer research study involving DNA from the Ringling elephants. And on the line with us is Dr. Schiffman, who Dr. Schiffman, I have never heard of this. Why have we never heard about the study for pediatric cancer in relation to elephants?
Well, this is brand new. First of all, thanks for having me on tonight.
Oh, thank you for your time. I know it's late.
Yeah, you bet. So this is, like you said, groundbreaking, but it's also brand new. No one's really ever taken a look at elephants before in this approach, so this is why you've never heard about it.
Now,
tell us.
I'm reading that elephants rarely come down with cancer. I guess are diagnosed with cancer.
That's right. That's right. And this is actually really a surprise, Patty, because and something we had never thought about before. I'm actually a pediatric oncologist, so that means I take care of children with cancer, and I also have a lab out here at the University of Utah, and you mentioned Primary Children's Hospital here in Salt Lake City, and we're very focused, or at least had been, on trying to understand who gets cancer and why, and even looking at people and families who got more cancer. And we learned about 3 or 4 years ago now that elephants almost never get cancer, and the surprise there was that elephants are so large. They're 100 times the size of people, have so many cells dividing so quickly for so long. They live 60, 70 years. Just by chance alone, you'd think all of those cells dividing over such a long period of time should randomly at least get cancer or turn into cancer. And actually, almost all elephants should be dying of cancer, but they don't. And so they've evolved some way to be protected from it. And so that's what really started our thinking about, well, gosh, why aren't elephants getting cancer when they should be getting more cancer? And can we learn how they're doing it so one day we could help children and families with cancer?
Well, because I'm reading of some of these numbers, and it says here that more than 16,000 children and teenagers are diagnosed with cancer annually in the United States alone. Did you find, and you said about 3 years ago was when you made this discovery, had you, up to that point or even since then, have you been able to find a correlation between, you know, you were talking about who gets cancer, whether it's genetic or in families or exposure to certain things. Was it kind of just a collection of information that you still were like, now what?
Well, yes. So, what we knew is that some of the families that we take care of here, and this is true for many families where cancer seems to run in the family, is that they are missing a working copy of a type of gene, not the type of genes we wear, but the type of genes that are DNA in our body. And we have two copies of every gene, or we're supposed to, one from our mom and one from our dad. But in some patients, we've learned that they're genes aren't working. One gene in particular is called P53, and this gene is known as the guardian of the genome. It's the policeman that really keeps us from developing cancer. When I talk to children and families, I say, think of a gene in its underpants with a cape floating behind its back, flying around our cells, and making sure we don't get cancer. And if Patty, this P53 gene discovers cancer that's starting, if there's any broken DNA or mutations, as we like to call them, then P53 springs into action. Both copies stops those cells from dividing and tries to fix it almost like a super spell checker. And if it can't fix it, then it actually goes on and it kills that cell so it won't turn into cancer. Well, it turns out that when there are families that there are lots of cancer that are occurring, that it turns out they're missing one working copy of their P53 gene. So one P53 gene is broken, and this gets passed along. And these children and families have 100% lifetime risk of developing cancer,
wow,
often at a young age. But it gets even more interesting with this P53 gene, and this will come right back to the elephants in just a minute, is that P53 actually is the most common gene involved in cancer. Doesn't matter pediatric cancer, adult cancer, doesn't matter brain tumor, breast tumor, colon cancer, you name it, over half the time the P53 gene in the cancer itself is broken, is not working. So the cancer is very sneaky. It says, well, I'll take out the policeman so it can't stop me from turning into cancer. And so we knew that P53 was a very, very important gene. And 3 years ago, like you mentioned, we learned that we heard a talk from someone, Dr. Carlo Maley, who's now at Arizona State University. And Dr. Maley was explaining that elephants rarely get cancer, which, as we were talking about, is a big surprise because you'd expect they'd all get cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said they looked at the genome, the DNA of elephants, and what they saw there was that instead of two copies of the P53 gene, like you and I have, Patty, elephants had evolved 40 copies, so 20 times as much P53. And
wow.
And he went on to say, and you'll understand in just a minute why the circus is involved in this. He went on to say, well, that could be the reason, but he didn't know for sure why elephants weren't getting cancer, but it was certainly very intriguing. So after I heard that, I went right up to him. And I said, Dr. Maley, you know, what would you say if I told you in our lab back in Salt Lake City, we are studying families who are missing P53. They get lots of cancer. You just told us elephants almost never get cancer and have extra P53. What if somehow, some way, we could get some elephant blood and we could test it in the lab and try to understand why those elephants aren't getting cancer if it has to do with that P53?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that's a great idea. But, Josh, where are you going to get elephant blood? And I said, and you can see where this story
goes. Excellent question, yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I said, you know, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I have no idea where I can get your blood from patients, but I have no idea where I can get your blood from elephants. And so...
yeah, they don't have that on Amazon. I've checked. It's really...
It's true. You could look. You get in big trouble if you order elephant blood. But, you know, what happened was, like most things, actually, in science, I went home and I forgot about the whole thing. Until a couple of weeks later, I found myself at the zoo, the local zoo here, the Hogle Zoo in Utah, with my kids. And we were watching the elephant show, and they explained that they actually draw blood at the zoo from their elephants to make sure that they're healthy and that their hormones are in balance. And
sure.
Then, like most places and at the zoo, and they said, if you have any questions, let us know.
Yeah. You're like, what do you do when you're done with that?
Exactly. You know, you were there. I said, here's my question. I said, how can I get me some of that elephant blood? And they, I learned later, almost thought about calling security.
Sure.
Luckily they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started working with our local zoo. But where the circus comes in, and this is the really the amazing, most amazing part, and I know the circus is in town now, which is so wonderful, is after working with the zoo for a year, we've been working with African elephants, but we needed more blood. We needed to know if this was happening in Asian elephants, because we were learning in the lab why these P53 genes or how they were working to prevent cancer in elephants. And I actually gave a presentation at a place called the International Elephant Research Symposium. It was an elephant meeting, of all places. And afterwards, people from Ringling Brothers and Barnum Bailey Circus introduced themselves to me and explained. I had no idea. I mean, this is a whole new world for me.
Sure.
I just knew about, you know, patients and medicine, not about elephants. And they explained that Ringling Brothers, which again is in town right now in Chicago, they have the largest herd of elephants, specifically Asian elephants, in the Western Hemisphere, all of North America. And they even have a center for elephant conservation.
Right.
Where they keep their elephants.
Hmm.
And so that was very interesting. I said, oh, okay, well, that's good to know. And then a couple weeks later, I was back again in Salt Lake. The phone rings, and it was the circus. And they said, Josh, we've got two questions for you. You know, we introduced ourselves at this elephant conference. We wanted to know, we're going to be in town. We're going to be in Salt Lake next week. We want to know, would you like some fresh blood for your experiments while we're, you know, we draw the blood like most places to make sure the elephants are healthy. But when we draw it, would you like a little extra? Question number one. And question number two, would you like some tickets for your family for the circus? So,
sure.
Patty, what choice did I have?
Oh, you got to say yes to that.
Exactly. And that was about 2 years ago. And since that time, we've had this beautiful partnership with Ringling Brothers. They've been very supportive of our work. They've given us, you know, unprecedented access to their elephants, and whenever the elephants were being drawn for, you know, normal elephant maintenance purposes, we were able to get a little extra blood and go down to the Center for Elephant Conservation and learn more about the elephants. And it's truly been a spectacular experience. They've actually supported us with small grants, and now you mentioned they've got this new initiative. And it's really this beautiful partnership because, you know, what I like to say is we work on keeping the kids healthy so Ringling Brothers can keep the kids entertained, right? I mean, it works out so well. So that was a very long answer.
No, I'm sitting here, Craig, I don't know about you, but I'm like, I want him to be my doctor.
Well, you know, it's funny because now when I go in with patients with cancer, and you know, it's the most devastating time in their lives.
Yes, of course.
And I'm able to suddenly turn things around, right? Because I'm there and our team is there. And I say, you know, obviously we're going to work so hard. We're going to cure your cancer. We're going to do everything we can. But did you know we're working with our local zoo and Ringling Brothers and Barnum Bailey, the circus,
mm-hmm.
to try to understand why their elephants don't get cancer? And what we learn from elephants might actually help you one day. And then suddenly everyone starts smiling and giggling, and it turns the whole scene around.
Yeah, so, I do want him to be my doctor. And I don't know, do we have to get you elephant blood? Is that how we get to
be everything
on your
else?
List?
Yeah. Yes.
Right. No elephant blood required. But, you know, what's really been fascinating, so we published this about a month ago in JAMA, which actually, JAMA is it's based out of Chicago right there, which is it's one of actually the world's leading medical clinical journals.
Mm-hmm.
And we were so pleased that they were interested in trying to understand potentially, you know, why these elephants don't get cancer because there's an application for human patients.
No doubt about it. I need to take a quick break and I want you to hold on because, one, I'm fascinated by your passion for this.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, with the direction that you're going with your research and the implications that it has, of course, immediately for children. We have a good friend of the show, Pat McGann, whose young son was diagnosed at 2 years old with cancer. We've worked very closely with the Curate Foundation here in Chicago.
Great.
So we'd love to talk to you if you have a couple minutes to just hang on.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah.
we are talking to Dr. Schiffman, who is one of the country's premier pediatric oncologists, and he has partnered with, the Ringling Brothers at Barnum & Bailey Circus is in town. And every city that they go to, they are donating $10,000 to local pediatric cancer places like Rush here, and then $10,000 goes to the research that Dr. Schiffman is involved in ending childhood cancer. So we are talking to him, and we're going to talk to him in just a moment, but we have to take a quick break on Pretty Late Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late, and I am indeed happy, in particular because our guest on the line is Dr. Schiffman, who is not just passionate, but really somebody who is breaking ground in the study of pediatric cancer. The Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus has partnered with what is the name of the hospital that you're with in Utah?
It's Primary Children's Hospital.
And we have a question from a listener, actually, that texted. You were saying that elephants just don't develop cancer because of their genetic code, correct?
Right, right.
So the listener wants to know, then, what do elephants die from?
Ah, that's a great question. So it turns out, in the wild, believe it or not, elephants often die from starvation. They live 60, 70 years, and they wear out their teeth, and they can no longer eat. And sometimes they get infections and arthritis, but it's very rare that they'll die from cancer.
Which
again is a surprise. And in fact, if you look at elephants, which we did as part of this paper in JAMA, again, encourage the listeners, they can go to type in JAMA and elephants. It's the only elephant paper that will come up in JAMA, I promise you. But anyways, what we did is we looked at something called the Elephant Encyclopedia, which keeps track of all elephant deaths, all captive elephant births and deaths. And elephants, it turned out, get cancer. It's rare, less than about 4% of the time, 4 or 5%. Humans get cancer about 50% of the time. So, and again, elephants are 100 times as big. So really, we think the reason that elephants evolved to be protected from cancer was so they could grow so large and become elephants. And so now, though, the challenge is on to try to think about and do things outside the box, which we like to be pioneers out here in Utah, is how, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we take 55 million years of elephant evolution and nature's way of preventing cancer and now apply it to children? And you know what, Patty? It's not just kids. So as I mentioned before, all cancers involve this P53 gene in some respect or another, over half of them. And as we age, as people get older and older, their P53 function naturally begins to decline. It's like those policemen of the genome.
Sure.
Well, they're eating too many donuts and maybe hanging out at the coffee shop a little more than they should, right? And so they're no longer as good at catching cancer. And as we get older, the rate of cancer goes up because cancer, you know, it's tragic in children, but it's also a disease of aging. So we think there's so much to learn from these elephants. Just another reason, right, that we need to conserve elephants and make sure they don't go extinct, because they really could help us one day maybe hold the cure, if we're lucky, for cancer, maybe even prevention.
And for all the people who've complained about the treatment of elephants at the Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey, I don't know that people know this about their goal to preserve the community of elephants in North America.
Absolutely, yeah.
And
yeah.
Well, I know. I'm dumbfounded by this. Before I let you go, so the obviously what we want to be able to do is, from your study, what you want to be able to do is, how do you introduce a way to fortify, to reinforce the P53, the police officer of the
right.
the healthy cells. So
right, yeah, yeah. So what I'll say really quickly is, one thing about the Ringling Brothers is, you know, I've become, you know, very close with the whole organization, as we've had to, so we, you know, learn from these elephants. They treat their elephants better than I treat my children. And I treat my children pretty darn good.
I was going to say, I don't want to make a judgment on you.
I'm not slamming my treatment of my children. What I'm trying to say is they really go out of their way to make sure their elephants are happy and healthy. And again, we would be unable to do what we do without their support. And what's great is this new initiative. So all of your listeners can get involved, and you can learn more, just quickly to plug it, if you type in Ringling Brothers Center for Elephant Conservation, or, you know, you'll go to their website. They have a really fantastic cartoon that they've made about the whole research and how people can contribute and participate. And and be a part of it. And it's been an amazing thing. And just what you said, Patty, so now we're working so hard. The race is on. How do we learn from these elephants? How do we figure out a way to get those P53s to help children, to help adults, to help everyone with cancer? And so, yes, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I want to thank you, and we need to have you on again soon. I don't know if you're coming to Chicago anytime soon, but I definitely need to have you in the studio if you happen to pass through our city.
Actually, I'll be there this spring. Maybe we can arrange something.
Maybe. Done. Whatever. Okay. We'll work on your schedule. Again, Dr. Shiffman said go to Google Ringling Brothers Elephant Conservation to participate in this very important study to support the kind of work that he's doing. We can't thank you enough for what you are contributing and improving our lives, saving our children, hopefully saving as we get older. You know, again, fortifying those police officers, the P-53. I've learned so much, and I look forward to talking to you some more. Do you want to direct any other websites before we let you go?
Well, there's, like I said, I encourage your listeners to check out the JAMA website right there in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So you just type in JAMA and elephants and P53, it should come up. And then, of course, people are always welcome to visit our lab website. If they type in Shiffman Lab in Utah, it should pop right up there.
The more we know, the more we can help each other. And I can't, again, thank you enough so much, Dr. Shiffman. And we look forward to talking to you very soon.
Excellent. And I look forward to talking to you.
Terrific.
Enjoy the circus while it's in town.
I'm going tomorrow.
All right. Well, listen, when you look at those elephants, remember, as they're dancing around, think, these elephants, they may hold the cure for cancer if we do it right.
And if we support work like yours. Have a great night. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. More after this on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Here's the number, 312-981-7200, because some of you are going to want to call and text, and I encourage you to do so. We are going to have an adult conversation, and we are all going to be kind to each other and to the best of all of our abilities, because today the House of Representatives have approved a bill to halt Syrian refugees by a count of 289 to 137. Joining me in studio, we have the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, Scott Stantis. We also have GeekToMe.net's chief operating officer.
Chief Geek Officer.
I forgot. That's what it was. Elliot Serrano. And Elliot, and now Scott has done some brilliant work in so many different...
thank you.
In so many different levels when it comes to what's important to us as human beings. Sorry, let me turn that off.
Yeah.
It's really hard to like compliment somebody and be like, that's my phone making noise on the air. And you consider yourself to be a conservative.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I think there needs to be a new category for people like you and me. And people who are like us, many people who are like us, where we support services for people who are developmentally challenged. We support gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
We support, I would say gun control, gun access to guns with some restriction.
Yeah, you and I are going to differ on the specifics.
But we're somewhere, we're certainly, I'm not as far to the other side, and you're not as far to the other side.
I'll listen.
Exactly. We'll listen. We don't get angry about it, right?
Right.
For the most part. So there just needs to be there needs to be a new category of people who are willing to have a conversation.
I think there is. It existed. It's existed for a long time. They're called grown-ups.
Oh, right. Yes, those people.
Yeah. It's, you know.
And Elliot as well. Elliot is willing to have a conversation. And he engages people often on Facebook. I don't understand why. But he does.
Don't get him started on the DC Marvel thing, because it just gets ugly.
He will talk to people about the Bible, about gun control, about the refugees. He has had very intelligent conversations with people who are not rising to that level. I've watched it, and I don't understand why he continues to give them any space on his Facebook page, but that's fine. But we do as well. We give everyone space. Last night, someone told me that until we fix the violence on the South Side, we should not let any more refugees in.
Well, that's silly. Can I jump in on the refugee thing as a conservative?
This is where we're going, yes.
Do you mind?
I don't.
I'm sorry, I'm kind of...
No, this is where we're going, to you,
okay.
Sir.
Okay. No, here's the thing. To all of my conservative brethren, and for those who believe in free markets and in growing economies, immigrants are a vital part of that. So if you believe in the free market, I do. If you believe in growing free markets, creating jobs, creating wealth, creating capital, immigrants have always been a major part of that component in this country. And so if you stop that, then you stop growth, you stop the economy, and you hate America, and you want the terrorists to win.
There you go. I guess we're done with the conversation. I don't know what else to say.
No,
that.
It's just it's. It,
yes.
The
sir, yes.
Being, I mean, immigration has been an issue for the last several months with Donald Trump. I cannot get my hands around.
I may have been using crass language. I was using crass language before the show started, and there was a guest in the green room. I didn't know she was there. Our Dr. Stryker. I was listening to Trump saying, "If these people were from Sweden, that would be fine."
But there is let's be clear and say that there is context here. And what the reasonable people are saying, Governor Rauner, and I hit him hard for saying, you know, being jumping on the bandwagon of no Syrian immigrants here. But if you listen to the whole context of what he said, it was reasonable. We just want to say, you know, stop for a second. Let's look at the vetting process. Is it adequate to protect ourselves? But that has to be true for
everyone
coming to this country.
Right.
So
why wouldn't we want the vetting process?
Well, I don't
to
think
be
anyone argues
rigorous.
With that. You know, I, any reasonable person. I mean, there are some libertarians who believe that we should just have open borders, period, and mm-hmm. have a free flow of individuals. Well, this world, as Paris taught us, as Beirut taught us, as Nigeria taught us, is it's more dangerous than that. And we have to be cautious. But mm-hmm. but past that, this country can't survive unless we have immigrants. It doesn't work. It can't work. We won't grow the economy. We won't. And you know, people say, well, that's just
people's heads are exploding right now.
I understand that. But the fact of the these are grown up facts. And they're hard. They're very difficult to argue with. And as a conservative, someone who believes in, you know, market forces that drive, you know, innovation, and these are good things for this country.
I suspect that you seem to me to be conservative in the sense that you hate liberals is more.
No, I don't. Actually, like Bernie Sanders, I think, is fascinating. Mm. I disagree with him, but I think he's fascinating. There's some liberal ideas, I think.
Not hate. I would say that
hate's a strong
you get
word.
Angry about.
I do, of course.
But I don't think that necessarily means that you're conservative. Like, for me, I don't agree with everything that liberals talk about either. I don't agree with everything that conservatives say.
I think there's a conservatism means something very different today than it did when I became one.
Okay.
And that was back in the 80s when, you know, you had Ralph Abernathy endorsed Ronald Reagan when he ran for president in 1980, because Reagan was speaking of the optimism and inclusion and raising old boats and. I don't know that conservatism necessarily says that anymore, mm-hmm. and that's a shame.
And I know that Elliot has had this conversation in both, I'm guessing, with friends and people that you agree with or disagree with. You know, because so many people claim that the United States is based on Christian foundation.
Judeo-Christian.
Judeo-Christian. Does it seem that closing the doors and saying no one who's running from ISIS is allowed to come into our country anymore? Does that seem Christian to people who are fleeing for their lives, who are being exterminated in their country?
Well, when you consider that the original Christmas was Joseph and Mary escaping from Herod and the execution of the firstborn, and they couldn't find room in the inn because of a heartless owner, it's very ironic that after some Christians, I say not a majority, but some Christians got all upset about a red cup at Starbucks, that this is your this is your chance to truly show what Christianity is about, and they're not showing it. This whole Christian nation malarkey, which I've said for forever, and I'm speaking as a Christian myself. I'm incredibly critical of many of in the Christian faith, because we just don't live by the tenets that we should be. And so that I get kind of accused of being an atheist just because I'm critical of it. So
right. So if you have complete faith, you shouldn't be critical.
Shouldn't be critical. You should just accept everything.
That's actually, I think, to be more Christian is to question your faith and to question if you are doing everything to the best of your ability to be true to your faith.
Well, I think that coupled with the fact that at least Catholicism, I can't speak for the, you know, those other Christian things. And by the way, I want to tell you, if you're not a Catholic, since the schism, it's okay. All's forgiven. Come on back. Come back.
You know, just because you guys had the first marketing campaign, you know, you think you're the one. You know,
well, we were the first. So
Protestants are working on their brand awareness
a little
we
bit.
Are doing
but
that.
Here's the thing. I mean, here's the thing. Not just Christianity, but here's an idea that spans every religion. I mean, Buddhism, Islam, Christianity, Judaism, Zoroastrianism, you name it. And it's the simple, it written in one way or the other, but very, very close. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. Very simple edict. just treat the other guy like you'd want to be treated. We can't do that. Mm-hmm. As a species, it's almost impossible for us to do that. Mm-hmm. It's mind-boggling. So, you know, when Francis talks about the plight of the immigrant, and he's going to go to Mexico, and he's probably going to walk across the border on his visit there, and that's going to be interesting. And I'm sure the American heads will explode. You want irony. Can I throw out a side issue? Because this is hilarious. Did you hear the governor of Texas? About why they don't want Syrian immigrants?
Yes.
There?
Yeah.
Because it's too easy to get guns.
Yeah. Is that ironic?
He didn't see it at all.
Is that ironic or is that just moronic? Which one is it?
Real quick, by the way, we are getting some texts from Aaron in the 708, and they go as follows. I'll read a couple of them. Okay, so we have vets that are homeless and poor and many other people. Let's take of our problems here at home first. I'm sure this won't be read on air. I do love the show, but I just don't agree.
These are, again, I said this last night, as a false choice.
Yeah.
As a
I
false choice.
Right. Yeah.
Because we are not upholding our promise to the people that we owe so much to, our veterans and people who are homeless, who are at disadvantaged, our most vulnerable. Look, hello, I'm on the show all the time talking about services for the disabled. Do you think that I wish that there were better services, but you know what? That doesn't mean, I'm sorry.
Well, no, here, let me read another one because you're sort of.
She's standing up, people.
These are all from Aaron. She's sending a lot of texts. And we do appreciate the text. Patty, you're not a political show usually, and this is why I listen, not just for the politics. And also, I used to like this Scott Stantis, but not anymore.
Wow.
She's getting very upset. But I would say, to the point you just made, that we've covered political issues because certainly—
Many times. I spent 7 weeks in Springfield.
Yeah.
I kind of do, like, all the time talk about politics, I would say, all the time. So what I was saying is— It's a false choice. And my listener last night who called in was very angry and didn't understand. That means that we can and should do both. We should take care of veterans. We should take care of our most vulnerable. We should make sure we can do all that. And we can help people who are fleeing for their lives. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and we are encouraging you to join the conversation. I think that we can have an adult level-headed conversation when it comes to how we want to treat human beings. That's really all it is, too. When people get mad at me about wanting to allow refugees, you are getting mad at somebody who wants to help save lives. When you are, there's nothing else to...
Well, but you're asking them to put in their money, and you know, I think that you have to expect a reasonable blowback, that they want to know that it's being spent. Well,
it's a conversation. It's not that like someone is stupid or reckless or, but I'm saying save lives. I'm not saying without, you know, without regard for our safety, without regard for, you know, making sure that we do it in the most efficient
way. And
that
we can afford it, frankly.
Yes.
And I think, there's ample evidence that we can. And the evidence is simply that immigrants come in here, they start businesses and they make money.
Mm-hmm.
That's the immigrant, story of America for the last 250 years,
but people don't seem to be doesn't seem to come down about to immigrants. It seems to come down to Muslim, to
yes.
to
oh, yeah.
ISIS,
yes,
to the,
well,
ISIS has said that they are hiding terrorists in refugee clumps, I guess, that they are trying to sneak them into different countries around the world, whether or not that is the case. And this is something like, okay, so maybe they are, and maybe there is someone that comes in. Right. Are we going to allow people to die in vast numbers because something might happen? Right. This is the same thing. And I mentioned this off the air. This is like with guns. We are told that, well, you know, just because someone has a gun doesn't mean they're going to kill. It might happen. Something bad might happen. Only it happens over and over and over again. And I'm told to shut my mouth because I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, you know what you're talking about. They just disagree with you.
Yeah.
I
don't tell someone to shut up when they say. If I once told a listener to shut up when they disagree with me, I listen to them and I try to find their logic and they try to find mine.
You can say tatois.
Tatois. Wow.
That's French for shut up. My mother said that to me all
to
the time.
Yes.
By the way, from the 630, this is
I never
want
to hear the term Christian nation again in reference to this country. I never want to hear the term American exceptionalism.
Well, it is.
How?
How?
How are we exceptional? We're acting like whiny little babies that are afraid of the boogeyman.
Yeah, we do that.
And lots of other countries are taking in these refugees without their concern. In fact, even Paris themselves, they're still going through with
the French said, I thought it was 30, but 60,000.
60,000 refugees, no, I think they were the ones who were hit. How are we exceptional at this point?
I think we're exceptional in terms of the ideals of this country, in terms of its functions of democracy, in terms of its open markets, in terms, I mean, there's a lot to, and there's a reason people come here.
Hey, guys.
Yes.
Can I read a text? If you,
of course.
Sorry about that. Sorry. From the 630, this is a long text, so bear with me. I think there's a couple mistakes. I tend to be liberal mostly, but I'm open to hearing anything. If I don't like it and I don't have to run to every outlet and say, no, this is nuts, I just smile and say, nah, that's something I don't agree with. And as a middle lower class citizen who's been beaten up by life, it's made me really care for one and all of the people in this world. And if no one can have the dream that my great grandmother had to come here as an immigrant, I think that would be sad. We are a land of the free, home of the brave. I think we've lost our being free, and we definitely have lost our being brave.
Bravo.
Right.
Bravo.
I think that's true. I think when you get scared, you do stupid stuff, and when you get mad, you do stupid stuff. I mean, I would ask anyone out there who's ever, have you ever made a good decision when you're angry? And I would say probably
not. I threw a
not.
Bike off a balcony one time. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And we have been talking about the vote today. The House of Representatives have approved a bill to halt Syrian refugees' entrance into the United States. And a lot of people agree with that. I do not agree with I think that there should be a screening process. They should be vetted. We should be safe. Absolutely. And one of the things people have said is that we are not taking care of our veterans. I want to read to you something from a veteran that was posted today. He's a former, he was in the Navy, and he was receiving some training. And it's a longer story, but this is how he sums it up. You should not let your ability to help be paused by your apprehension about helping. It's a reminder that in this world, you have the courage to do the right thing. And if you do the right thing and something wrong happens because of it, you deal with that knowing you'd had the courage to do the right thing, and you'll have the courage to cope with whatever fate awaits. So for those of you who, on a blanket statement, for most of us who have not served in the military, and I'm sure there are people in the military who don't even agree with that either, but if you want to make a blanket statement about our veterans, that's a veteran who is saying, we must do the right thing. We must provide a safe haven for people who are fleeing for their lives. And I'm not saying without regard for our own safety. I have never said that. Nobody who is saying that we should save people have said without regard for our safety. Sorry.
That's okay.
So that's just one thing I wanted to share. Because last night I read something by George Takei, and people got mad about that too. So perhaps
Sulu?
He was in an internment camp as a young as a young child, and he had some thoughts about that too.
And President Trump will bring those back. In fact, he said we may even need something to identify Muslims, and you're just going, oh my God, little yellow stars.
Well, that's the thing. So what does that mean? What does it mean to be Muslim? I had asked before the news, what does it mean to be your religion? What does it mean to you to be Jewish? Well, how would you describe that to a six-year-old? If you would talk to me like I'm six and tell me what it means in your mind to be a Christian, how would you sum that up? We have a listener on the line, Mr. Kite, who wanted to join the conversation. How are you doing, Mr. Kite?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Very well. Thank
Good.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me on the show tonight. So, in my opinion, what it means, I was born and raised as a Catholic.
Uh-huh.
And I'm 23, so not too long ago, but back when I was a kid, I was basically taught that being a Catholic is like following the Bible word for word, believing every story. And, you know, the Ten Commandments and, like, basically all these things that seem to, like, really bizarre, but you just believe them because you're told them. And, you know, being in a Catholic school, it's a strict environment.
Right.
You don't really question what you're learning.
Right.
So it's like, to me, it's almost like propaganda or, like, brainwashing. And, you know, then when I got to high school, which was a public school, I started to, like, you know, rethink what I thought. And ultimately, I would say that I basically have an entirely different view of what God is.
Are you still Catholic?
I would identify as Catholic, but I don't believe, I used to, like, picture God as a male figure, like wearing, like, white and like heaven was like clouds and you go to heaven and you go to hell. And now I kind of think that God is just like the essence of everything around us, and that we all make up God, and God is not just one thing.
Well, here's something. The Catholic tradition, which is part of the church, I am Catholic, and which I love about the church, is that they readily admit and preach and enforce that God gave us one of the greatest gifts that, that he could give us, or she, or, you know, that, and let's say he, just because we can.
Out of habit.
that he gave, and that's free will. And so he gave Mr. Kite the ability to think and to say, you know, to question this stuff. I question it, and then I find myself always coming back to my core beliefs. So, and I'm glad you exercise that. That's wonderful.
Then this is exactly what I was talking about. This is Mr. Kite. I appreciate that. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I texted you guys about the Teletubbies last night.
For them or against them?
That was amazing.
You didn't think you were going to get. You didn't think you were going to achieve that level of success.
Not at all.
No, wasn't that great? It was a Brandon C. Price.
You did a good job. And you brought up the baby in the sun. And you know, it's some trippy stuff. But so the last thing I was going to say is that also being Catholic, I don't think that church is at all what it was like taught to me as, because I don't know, I just feel the approach to teaching kids Catholicism, at least, is kind of just telling them that you, that all of this stuff is true and that you just have to do it because God says so.
Right.
And going to church was meaningless. It was just doing it because it's what we had to do.
Right.
And I find now that I don't go to church because I don't get anything out of it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with people who do like going to church. My dad likes going to church, but I don't think that to be religious, you necessarily have to follow everything that the Bible and the rules say so literally. And I don't know, it's kind of, it bothers me a little bit how seriously some people take it.
I agree. I need you to do me a favor, Mr. Kite. Will you hold on the line, because I would like to give you a $25 gift card to Lou Malnati's for being the first person that was confident and brave enough to and be honest to share their thoughts on their religion, because this isn't an easy conversation for everybody. And also for getting Brandon C. Price to do the Teletubbies dying last night. It was fantastic. So
that would be amazing. I love Lou Malnati's.
42, of course, 42 locations in the Chicagoland area, and go to loumalnati's.com to find out more, which is a weird thing. We're talking religion, also deep dish pizza. There's nothing wrong with that. It is quite holy. We have on the line with us, go ahead, Pat is on the line. Hi, Pat. How are you doing?
Fine. How are you?
Oh, it's always good to hear from you, Pat.
Thank you. I'm Catholic. And I believe strongly in the Golden Rule and in the Sermon on the Mount, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, give a home to the homeless.
See, these are great things. If someone was telling me that was their religion, I love these things already.
And very simple. And when the Pope was here and he spoke to Congress, it was the Golden Rule that he emphasized.
Precisely. Yeah.
And my one son, who was in Iraq and Afghanistan and saw those wars, lost his religion. And he came back. Oh, wait. It gets good.
Okay.
He called me up one night and was talking about religion. And I was shocked. And I said, "What happened?" And he said, "The Pope."
Oh,
nice.
He said he's so kind, and he said, and he's so Christ-like. And I couldn't agree more. That guy just thrills me, the way he cares for the poor and the homeless and the prisoners.
Pat, my father was in World War II, and he was a frontline soldier, and he was an altar boy. I mean, he was very active in diocese, I can't remember which one, here in Chicago where he grew up. And when he went to war, he was very young, he was 17 and a half, and but when he came back, he lost his religion, and he never got it back. So I'm glad to hear that your son has.
Me as well.
His father died while he was over there, so he got mad at God.
Yeah.
See, it was just too much.
Well, I can tell you, when my brother died unexpectedly, I left God behind for a long time because I said, if he,
I think we all do.
And I think there's something too, you know, questioning your faith. That's what we were talking about in the last half hour. Was there is, I think there is a, you know, something that is pure about going, is this what I need? Is this what I want? And it doesn't mean that you, it makes you any less of a Christian to question it. It means that you're searching for answers.
Oh, I can tell you down south where they have Baptists, I was in the newsroom and I said, I question God all the time. And they said, oh, you can't do that.
Yeah.
I go, well, I seem to have just done it. So,
I think it's a good thing to do it. I think it's like going through your teen years, sort of.
Hey, Craig, what do I have left in my prize closet? I don't know what gifts we have. I think we have another Lou Malnati's. Pat, I don't know if we've given you one before, but I would love to give you a pizza.
You have.
I have. Has it been recently?
Yeah.
Has it been recently?
It was in March.
That's fine. We have a $25 gift card. Have another pizza on me, Pat.
Thank you.
It's the end of the week. I don't think I've been using them up. And we have two people who joined the conversation and were brave enough to share their, these are intimate things. Religion can be very intimate. And when we talk about whether or not we want to help people and we base our beliefs in religion on, you know, saying that we'll save Christians, but not Muslims. If that's part of the conversation, I think that it's important to understand each other a little bit. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. One of the reasons I'm asking, what does it mean to follow the religion that you belong to? What does it mean to be a Christian, to be Jewish, to be Muslim? Part of it is really, I honestly don't know. I don't have a religion. I would say I'm more Christian. I was raised Christian.
You were raised Mormon, right?
I was baptized Mormon. The first 10 years of my life, I was in the Mormon church. I would not consider myself to be Mormon, regardless of what my brother says. My brother was a Mormon missionary and says that you can't actually leave the church, which sounds a little intimidating.
Sounds like the mob.
That's what I said. They keep pulling me back, Elliot. and it was, look, it was fine. I think that there were a lot of things I learned that I do appreciate, but it was not... I didn't feel it. I mean, you know, it didn't speak to me. There are fundamentals that I disagreed with even at a very young age. There were scare tactics that I think that our listener, Mr. Kite, mentioned earlier were similar. You know, kind of this idea that when I died, if I didn't do this or do that, then for eternity, there was a lot of threatening. It seemed like a lot of threatening stuff. And I, you know, even at 10, I was like, well, that just seemed, plus they almost drowned me when they baptized me. We have Charlie on the line and he had to tell a girl to hold her nose. Hey, Charlie, how are you doing?
Great, yourself.
Thank you. Well, thank you. What would you like to share with us?
Well, I'm an agnostic, okay?
Okay.
Doug Turkle defined it one time as a, you know, a person that's afraid and not an atheist. But, I mean, I believe in God.
Right.
There's definitely got to be a God. There's so much stuff that goes on that somebody's got to control, and it sure isn't you and me. But, I mean, I don't need to have somebody say, oh, you have to pray to Christ, you have to pray to Allah. You have to pray to Buddha.
Right.
To me, you look at the Bible. To me, the Bible is nothing but a large work of fiction. You know, and I know I'm going to get a lot of people going, oh, how can you say that?
I would say, and plus it's been retranslated, its interpretation, really, Scott? You believe word for word?
No,
or,
I don't. No, Catholics don't.
But it's storytelling. It's
some of it. I think the New Testament is clearly, especially the life of Christ and the teachings of Christ, the letters of Paul. I mean, those are.
Yeah.
I had this discussion with a in-law family member, if that's the way you put it. Sure, let's go with that.
Yes.
About Revelations, how they kind of stuck it in there. It doesn't fit.
Right.
But anyway, go on, Charlie. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Yes.
So, no, not at all. Not at all. But like I said, I just don't think that. You know, I mean, so much, I've just found so much stuff that I find hard to believe about the life of Christ or, you know, anything like that. But like I said, there definitely has to be a God because somebody's got to run this whole crazy world and it sure isn't me, I'll say that.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't Thomas Jefferson and several of the other founding fathers, they were deists.
Deists, which was?
And the idea that, kind of like the watchmaker, that God has made the earth free will
right.
and kind of lets us off to do our thing to see how that turns out.
Yeah, in fact, one of the, I do a comic strip called Prickly City, and one of the, I have massive reaction And she's looking up at the heavens, asking God, why do you let bad things happen? And the stars form a question to her, back to her, saying, why do you let bad things happen?
Yeah.
And I think that more, that's the more salient point.
That's the camp that I'm in, I think.
Exactly.
Charlie, thank you so much. Now, do you end up getting into discussions like religious arguments, or do you just kind of hang back a little bit and go, everybody else go ahead and have your debate?
The people that I used to argue with know how I feel now. They kind of just look at me and go, "Oh, you're in trouble." You know,
there's Charlie.
There's Charlie. Yeah. He's gonna be caught in purgatory because he can't choose.
He's indecisive.
I've got a couple of my kids go to like a Bible Thumper, Bible Fundamentalist church.
Uh-oh.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, does it make them better people? I mean, that's how you decide if your religion sucks. Does it make you a better person?
Oh, I like that. I like that sort of threshold. I like that as a sort of a measure of a religion. Does it make you a decent person or an asshole?
Exactly.
I mean, that's their choice, though. That's their choice. If they want to, if that's what they believe, fine. But, you know, just like I've told other people, okay, that's your religion, but don't try to force it down my throat.
Mm-hmm. Well, and here's my take on religion and foisting it on people is, my religion makes me happy. I think it
does it make you happy. That's an even better. I like that as a better measure.
And it makes me better.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me better. So, you know what? And I would never for a moment look at Elliot or look at Vasquez. Did I say that right this time?
Vasquez.
Oh, geez. I'm never going to get that right. Mm-hmm. And say, have you heard the good news? Because I don't. But by example, and that my life is good.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to be a good person. And it's informed by my faith. And if that's the litmus test.
There you
go. I listen to Yoda.
Yeah. There is no try. There is only do or do not. What is
do,
it?
Do or do not. There is no try. Mm-hmm. Fear is a path to the dark side.
Religious you are.
Yeah, you can't do it in the not Yoda voice.
Oh, sorry.
You're going to quote Yoda.
I didn't want to just break in. Sorry.
No,
I mean, as Yoda.
There you go. Thank you, Charlie. Now we're going to go off to the force right now. Have a great night, okay?
Yeah, you too, guys.
Thank you so much for joining the conversation. Todd wanted to share with us as well. Hey, Todd, how are you doing?
Good. How are you, Patty?
Hey.
He sounds like Darth Vader.
He sounds like a firefighter who's put in his time.
Yeah, there you go. Luke, I am your father.
Oh. Ooh.
Anyway, we had a situation. My mom passed away about 8 years ago, and I've always been – I actually almost got into a fight with a priest about this when my wife and I were getting married. You know, I fell away from the church itself. Because it was always when you went in there, you felt like you had to give money. You had to give. They were pressuring you all the time. Got everything from the church sent to your house. You know, we really need. And I gave as much as I could.
Right.
When we were getting married, he basically said to me, he goes, well, how do you think the church functions? And I go, well, how do you think I function?
Nice.
I have to put a roof over my head, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. So. It got pretty heated. My wife ran out because she was so upset with me for fighting with the priest. And, you know, we went through and got married and all that. And my kids grew up with a grandmother that was around all the time, took them everywhere. And if I break up, it's because I still miss the hell out of
them. I know. Yeah. It doesn't get easier. It just gets different.
Right. And when she came down with cancer, it was a long process. It was like 5 years that she, I don't even want to say survived, she existed.
Mm-hmm.
And when she passed away, my son had a girlfriend who had already fallen away from God and said, you know, if God was there, why would he take her? And it pushed him away. Mm-hmm. And I said, God let your grandmother see you graduate grade school, get into high school, get to see your sister grow and got to see the birth of her second grandchild for my brother.
Right.
I said, you know, and I prayed to God to take her, to put her out of her misery. And it was one of those things that, you know, it finally clicked into him that, yeah, he is, you know, God in my eyes is he's going to be there whether you ask. You could ask for $1 million, you're not going to get it.
Right.
Ask him to be merciful, and that carries on into you. And, you know, this whole thing that's going on right now with the Christians Bible thumping over this Muslim with the Paris thing. I am very much a conservative, but you know, this is ridiculous. I just made a post today. I want both sides to stop because they're both being idiots
mm-hmm.
about the way that they're progressing. I haven't seen one good conversation on Facebook yet. It, like you said, it's name calling. It's friendships that are getting ruined.
Hey, Todd, I just wanted to jump in. And in your special way, you're actually voicing what C.S. Lewis said very eloquently when he talked about God and prayer. He says, when I pray to God, it doesn't change God. It changes me.
Ooh.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's all I wanted to say.
Well, Todd, I want to thank you, as I always thank you, for not just joining the conversation and for sharing your fantastic pipes with us, but also for the work that you do with the Chicago Fire Department. We'll talk to you again soon. I got to find out next time about what church it was because we're in the same neighborhood. Have a great night.
More
after this on 720 WGN. Host Patty Vasquez, and we are in the Allstate Showcase studio, the very festive Allstate Showcase studio, which is even more fun having friends of mine from Zanies in the studio. We have Dr. Bill Miller, who is performing on Monday night at the Zanies on Wells. What's the name of the show?
Yes, Sam, the name of the show is Bad Bedside Manner.
Bad Bedside Manner.
Yeah, it's kind of a biographical account of how I practice medicine.
So it's better to come see the show than to be treated by you?
Absolutely.
Just checking. I'm sure you're an excellent doctor. It's probably more your perception of how you are with patients, right?
No. Because all the patients have surveys, you know, when they're done getting treated. And then the hospital showed me that, you know, they evaluate me. You know that expression, 4 out of 5 doctors recommend?
Yeah.
They think I'm the fifth guy.
Right. You're not recommended. So. Cindy Nelson is the general manager of the Zanies in Rosemont. And actually, with all the clubs or specifically?
I do a little bit overall. Yeah, I'm booking all 3 of them now and doing some stuff. Wherever they tell me to go is where I go.
And you brought Chris, the bartender, who actually, Chris and I, this was our idea months ago. You said, if you ever need a bartender.
About a year ago.
Was it that long ago? God, everything, time flies. I thought it'd be fun to have you in every month because you change your cocktails. You have a drink of the month. Tonight you have something a little bit a little fruity was the way you'd described it.
Yeah, this one.
It doesn't. You said banana, and I always think it's going to be something that tastes very thick.
Right.
I guess is the best way to put it. But this is very light.
No, that's why we like. That's why we started with this one.
Mm. It's really good.
It's
very
good.
Tasty.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a banana. What's it? Gone bananas?
It's called Gone Bananas on our menu.
Martini? It's a martini.
Gone Bananas.
Yeah.
I like
that.
How is that not the name of a comedy club? Nick DiGilio is fascinated with comedy
club
names.
Isn't there a Bananas?
There is a Bananas.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
But Gone Bananas, I think,
that
has,
would be good.
Has more to it.
It does. It has a little something, a little extra.
Where are you going? I'm Gone Bananas. No, that's not good. This is fantastic. Now, is this something that you, because we talked about how you experiment, and I know that you try it out on the staff.
Actually, a lot of the cocktails I experiment on my fiance with. And this was one of those where we were stuck in a snowstorm one night and needed to go out and just find something to have because we were buried. So we actually walked down the street to the local liquor store and picked out some ingredients, and it was, flavor of the night was banana. So we worked on this that night.
So
it's stuck in a snowstorm. We wanted something fruity and tropical.
Is it Malibu? Is that
No, it's not.
Is it coconut?
This is a vodka base. It's a Van Gogh banana vodka, and it's also mixed with Curzan rum. So it's got double. It's a double whammy along with banana liqueur.
Nice. Now, is Van Gogh a vodka that you carry at the restaurant at the Zanies?
We do.
Because
for this,
I love Van Gogh
flavors. Yeah, we have a lot of specialty flavors. Yeah.
They're the sponsor. I do a Bloody Mary contest every year. I don't like. How many can I drink? But I mean, I'm a judge at the Bloody Mary.
How good they are.
Yes.
I bet the last ones are much better than the first ones. Aren't
surprisingly,
they usually?
No. Surprisingly,
really?
They give up at the end. Like they were. I don't know what the process is by which who goes first. But there's a significant drop off. Like, well, this is all we had. We had plastic cups and a big straw. It's very serious.
Really?
I think you just raised the bar on Bloody Mary, so I have to.
Zanies should tell. It's in Highwood every July, and some of it's spectacular. Some of them you've seen where they're just very elaborate. You know, some have like noodles coming out of them.
There
or
used
like,
to be a place out in St. Charles that had a Bloody Mary bar, and bacon and just
your own fixings.
I'm like, it's a salad bar.
But Rocket.
But aren't you supposed to drink Bloody Marys the morning after a heck of a party the night before?
Well, that's why Sunday brunches. It's perfect.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's supposed to like calm the nerves. Am I right?
Really? You're a doctor. You should know.
Yes, doctor. What is your experience with the hair of the dog?
I've had my nerves calmed several times.
Now, you've been an ER doctor in the past.
Yes.
Yes. And so you've seen a lot of stuff.
I've seen a lot of stuff.
Yeah, anything that, and I know that, you know, obviously there's a doctor, you know, patient privacy kind of issues. But, you know, did doing comedy help you stay sane through all the things that you experienced in the emergency room?
Yeah, but more so you get to pick out what's really funny. And you know, like people tell you why they're there, and it's hard not to laugh.
Yeah, thank you for not doing that, I'm guessing, for a lot of the... You did what to what?
Exactly. You got
he's
what, where?
And he just laughs.
Yeah. And he just, excuse me, and then you go outside. You got to see this.
Oh, man. I don't know if I've ever been a patient where people have got to go. Although I have had, I don't want to tell too many stories, too many personal stories. But I never want to be the patient where the doctor goes, you know what, I'll be right back. And the next thing you know, there's like a whole
team of
people. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes.
A lot of people waiting outside the room.
Yeah, they're eating popcorn.
Just want to take a peek at you.
Do you know what? I had that happen once when a girlfriend of mine ran a spa. And so she would put us in as the guinea pigs. Well, there was a procedure, a waxing procedure that she asked me to have. And I go, okay, fine. I get the hot rocks. I get everything good. I'll try the Brazilian. I had three people in there.
Yeah. In the room.
And I'm going, if this ends up on the internet, I swear. They're like, you're being a really good sport about this.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do? I mean.
So they like, it was like a cosmetology.
It was
like,
sort of a. It was a really good spa that I'm not going to give the name of.
Watch and learn.
But it was people that were training. And my girlfriend, she goes, so I just need sort of guinea pigs. And I'm never.
They gave you a discount in order to use you as a learning experience.
They let us do it free because they were, you know, training.
Yeah.
But when you're training, you don't always get the best, I'm guessing.
No, you get the newbies. I mean, they can't do it on cadavers like doctors do in medical school. So they got to.
They got to find people like me.
Chris is like, what did I sign up for? Who wants a cocktail?
Oh my god.
That's fantastic. All we know about doctors, if you're not in medical school, haven't gone through it, is what we watched on, you know, on Grey's Anatomy. Do you ever watch any of the hospital dramas?
No, I don't. My daughter does. Mm-hmm. She thinks doctors are really macho because she watches Grey's Anatomy, where interns save lives and end up in romance, you know, in the linen closet.
Every 15 minutes.
And that is such crap. Can I say that? It's
crap?
Such. Yeah, because it takes us months of begging a nurse before she'll have a drink with us. I mean, it doesn't happen every 15 minutes.
But these are mostly the doctors. When they have an affair with the nurse, things go badly because you know, the nurses, they don't put up with stuff.
Nurses pretty much run the show.
Yes.
And they let us think that we're in charge, but we know we're not.
Thank you for saying so.
It's true. When I write an order, I know it's just a suggestion, and she's going to tell me if she did it or not.
Have you seen this great post on Facebook about this young man down in the South whose wife is a nurse? He posted a really beautiful picture of her napping, like cuddling with her son before she goes off to work. And I think it went viral, but it was a really beautiful piece about his wife being a nurse. And kind of, you know, people sort of they're dismissive of nurses. And it's a really sweet piece because my son who was in the special care nursery, the NICU, they called it, they were the ones that, you're right, because doctors come in with a flurry of information. Right. They kind of know what they have to say. They know what the stats are. The nurses are the ones that have to implement the plan.
Right.
They have to carry out all the instructions, make sure that a patient understands what's happening to them, what to do next, those kinds of things. I'm trying to see if I can find this post because it really touched me. And it was here. This is my wife is taking a nap. In an hour, she will wake up, put on her scrubs, and get ready for work. The tools and items she needs to perform her job will be gathered and checked meticulously. Her hair and makeup will be done quickly. She will complain that she looks awful. I will disagree emphatically and get her a cup of coffee. She will sit on the couch with her legs crossed under her and try to drink it while happily playing with the toddler that's crawling all over her. She will occasionally stare off blankly as we talk, slightly steeling herself for the coming shift. She thinks I don't notice. She will kiss the baby, she will kiss me, and she will leave to go take care of people that are having the worst day of their entire lives. Car wrecks, gunshot wounds, explosions, burns, and breaks. Professionals, poor pastors, addicts, and prostitutes. Mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, and families. It doesn't matter who you are or what happened to you. She will take care of you. She will come home in 14 hours and remove shoes that have walked through blood, bile, tears, and fire from aching feet and leave them outside. So that's just a really beautiful piece.
Yeah,
that's really nice.
And it's true.
It's absolutely true.
It's true. They have the most compassion. They are I can't overemphasize how important they are and how much they do.
Yeah, they are absolutely. Did you see when the nurses got? I mean, the social media poop storm. Let's put it that way.
The what?
When Joy Behar and the women on The View were mocking a Miss America pageant contestant.
Yes, because she did her thing in the scrubs.
She did
a
monologue.
Awesome.
It was.
It was so cool.
I don't know if you heard about this.
No, I didn't.
But Joy Behar was like, why is she wearing a costume? And another host said, she's just reading her emails or something. And she was telling this touching story about a patient, an Alzheimer's patient that she has, who she cares for, and reminded her of why it's so important to be a nurse. So, but I know that you make fun of your position as a doctor, but you know, you've saved lives. It's I know that you also were a comedian. It was comedy first and then medical school?
Kind of at the same time.
Yeah.
Kind of at the same time.
Yeah. Which anyway, is probably also helped you survive medical school.
Well, it did. You know, a lot of times we're going around in morning rounds or whatever, and the professor's talking to all the underlings, and I was one of them, and he's saying something, and it struck me as funny, so I'm taking my notepad out and I'm writing down so I don't forget what this funny thing was. And
he he thinks you're like meticulous.
And he starts talking slower, so I get it all. And I'm trying hard not to crack up.
That's got to be a hard decision when medical school takes so much time. It's consuming and exhausting, and you still have this passion to be a comedian.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's my parents pushed me into medicine. I wanted to do comedy, so I kind of did both.
Yeah.
Try to please us both.
There you go.
And how happy were they that you switched?
Oh, no. They didn't like it at all.
I wouldn't imagine after medical school.
You know, so I still kind of do both, so I'm still pleasing us both.
Somebody's got to. Chris, where did you grow up?
I grew up north of here in Waukegan.
In Waukegan? Yeah. Jack Benny's home. I don't know why I have to say that every single time.
we're reminded of it constantly.
I know. Why? I mean, like, there has to be some other claim to fame for Waukegan.
Ray Bradbury.
Oh, that's a good claim to fame. That's an excellent one.
Did he write about it?
Yeah, actually. There's one short story you wrote about.
He wrote one?
Yeah, about some steps in a park.
I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah.
More with our guests. We have Cindy Nelson, the general manager at Zanies in Rosemont, and she has some great shows to tell us about when we come back. Chris is going to whip up another cocktail, I think. We'll be listening to him shake that up when we come back. And Dr. Bill Miller is at Zanies on Wells Monday night. Showtime is at 8:30.
8:30.
You can go to zanies.com for information about all the shows at Rosemont, St. Charles, downtown Chicago, and even Nashville. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by our good friends from Zany's Comedy Club, and Chris is whipping up a cocktail as we speak. There it is. Cue the shaker. Yeah, no. Now, Cindy, you were saying that you were a little suspicious, but hesitant to appreciate this cocktail.
Well, I told them, and I just know what I want, and then they do it. And I told them, I said, I want like a pumpkin one for November and a cranberry drink for December and the holidays. So they came up with this, and it's called the Naughty Pumpkin.
Yes.
And I tasted it. I go, this is amazing.
Wow, I like amazing.
It is. I don't know if we should tell her until she let her try it.
Let me try it out. All right, let me try a little bit. Thank you, sir. Oh, and it's got even a little bit of sprinkle of.
A little bit of whipped cream, a little bit of.
Oh, hello.
Isn't it good?
That is better than any pumpkin latte at Starbucks. I'll tell you that right now.
And you know what? It's whiskey based. It's almost all whiskey.
You know what? That's why I like it.
I hate whiskey. And
oh,
after
really?
I tried it, they're like, well, what's in it? Whiskey. I go, oh my God, I hate whiskey. Yeah. Like, I can't. It doesn't even taste like it.
No, because you probably think of whiskey as like a wood chip taste.
I think of whiskey as Jack Daniels in college.
Yeah.
Is what I think of.
Yeah, and that's not, by the way, that's not the case. Chris will tell you that's not accurate.
There's, Jack Daniels is.
All very similar in the way they're put together.
Right.
But we have the fortunate ability to get some of these new whiskeys. And this one, again, last time we were here,
it comes down at a microphone. Come on, sit down.
Yeah.
Look, he's like cleaning up after him.
Right. Oops,
yes,
sorry.
You were saying about your whiskey? Yes.
Fortunate enough to have access to some really new, nice Canadian whiskeys. Last time we had some to give you. And this time we're using the same brand. It's from Piehole. It features a pecan whiskey.
Oh, that's what it is.
Piehole's really good.
I'm sorry. What'd you call me?
Pie.
Shut my wife. Shut your pie hole.
But it's also there's two kinds of whiskeys in there. Just a regular Irish whiskey mixed with some pecan, and then there's pumpkin spices in there as well.
Very nice.
And they mix a little cream with that.
Just a little. They used to do the heavy cream, and every drink I would taste, I go, I'm not drinking this. Like it's like 85% butter fat.
It makes a difference.
So then they made it with like the little bit. It's not a skinny cream by any means, but it's way better than the heavy cream they used to use.
I do prefer the heavy cream because it's a fat's a flavor carrier, so you can pull a lot of really good flavors out of it. But it's not very kind to
women.
To anyone.
Let's just be honest.
Well, now, is moonshine legal now? Because I'm seeing some ads in magazines about
legalized. They call it moonshine. They call it moonshine.
So what is the difference?
It's probably made in a distillery.
It's made in a distillery, and there's tax paid on it as it comes out of the still versus clandestine brewing.
It tastes like blackberry rubbing alcohol. Not that I would know what that is, but I'm guessing that would be.
Well, you put whipped cream on top. I'm sure it'll smooth it out.
Exactly. Well, Dr. Bill, now Cindy and Chris, Bill, you all have different experiences with people at different levels of, let's say, alcohol consumption. People, when they come out to have a good time, you want them to have a good time in moderation. But Dr. Bill has often seen them when they have not.
They
had a good time, and I see him after the good time.
Yes.
When the good time's over.
Yeah, it's not fun anymore. No, not fun at all.
No, and that's the thing is anything, like right now I'm tasting these, but I mean, I'm not having the entire drink because I have a show to do. I have a family to take care of when I go home. Yeah. You know, my boys will be up early, but it's really lovely to taste what you have at the club. But you know, when people end up in the emergency room, you want to remind people it's the holiday season, but with a little moderation.
A little bit.
A little bit goes a long way.
Stay home. Don't drive.
Uber and Lyft.
Yeah. I mean, there's really now no excuses. It's so easy to just order up a car. It's so affordable.
I had my first Uber experience like a few weeks ago, and I'd never. We did it. And I went, oh my god! No wonder everybody does it. You just press a button on your phone, and they're there.
Cheap. I should give you my. I have a code for. I wonder, Craig. They sent me a code, and they said share it with my friends, and that my friends would get like a discount on their ride if I share it on the air.
How many friends does she have?
I mean, like, how crazy? Wait a minute. I just realized that. They sent me an email that said, here's your code. Share it with your friends. They'll get a discount, and then you get a discount. So
they may take away your code if you share it with everybody.
But, I mean, like, the point is they said they didn't give me a restriction. They didn't say, unless you have a radio show.
No, it doesn't matter. You could share that, and you will get all the credit.
Because there was a woman in L.A. who told me her code, and she told me to share it with everybody. She said to mention it on my show, and I just realized.
Then you'll get.
Why don't I just mention my
you
code?
You should mention your code as opposed to.
People do it on Reddit, actually. They just share their codes, and then you can download it, and Reddit users get a whole bunch of free rides.
Well, here's the question. I don't know what kind of trouble I would get in.
Let's try.
Go with him. Yeah. He said zero.
It doesn't say, like, don't post it on your Facebook page or something. It says invite others to Lyft, and they'll get credit to get started, just like you did. When they take their first ride, you'll get a free credit added to your account. So listen closely.
It's a long number.
Here we go. This is so... You get a ride credit if you use my code. I'm going to give this out a lot.
I would start every show with it.
Patricia. Really. So Patricia, spelled the traditional way. Patricia 098963. So there you go.
Done.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me in the Christmassy tree time decorated Allstate Showcase Studio, we have Elliot Serrano, who is the chief geek officer from geektome.net. Esmeralda, I know we haven't had a chance to talk to you very much tonight, and I apologize. It's been crowded.
No, totally cool.
And I aspire to the next time we have Dr. Stryker on to say vagina as many times as possible.
Can we do the little ding?
Yeah, I think we should do the bell. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's always gone well for us.
For those of you not familiar, Craig and I, on a holiday previous, it was 2 years ago now, wasn't it?
That is 2 years ago.
Yes.
I still remember it, though, clear as day.
Yeah, we were all working on a holiday, and we were reading a list of emergency room reports that were penis-related.
The worst penis injuries of 2013, I guess it would have been.
Elliot, the one that confused me the most was somebody who had injured himself on a treadmill.
Oh, that's not... We don't need to rehash any of these.
That's happened to me.
Okay. Who's running without their pants on?
Yeah, wait.
Did you fall forward?
Elliot, do you have like a bunch of penis injuries yourself? Do we have a whole Elliot?
He's half of those on the anonymous list that we read.
Are we going to do the warning thing again? Because
no, there's no warning.
All right.
No.
Yeah. It's just, you know, I'm sorry, but it's out there. And sometimes you're in motion and things happen.
Well, this is where he'd gotten it caught in the tread, like in the mechanism of the. Yeah. This. So, yeah. No, he was getting.
That only happened to me.
That's just an unfortunate accident.
It happens to zippers all the time. I mean, come on, let's face it. And it's.
Well, sometimes you haven't done laundry and there's a little proximity between flesh and zip. Yeah.
And when you're wearing those short shorts, you know, and things kind of like, yeah.
So. It gets crowded.
Velcro. That should be
no.
The key now. No.
Okay, dude. Okay. I mean, seriously, Esmeralda, would you put Velcro in your bikini bottom? We know
I'm
what's going to happen there.
Well, rather than metal zippers?
Mm-hmm. No, but, well, things get caught in Velcro too, you know?
Oh, my God.
This conversation is interesting. By the way, Barbara called in. She wanted to know your Lyft code again because she likes the Lyft idea.
Yes. Okay, so if you haven't tried Lyft, and I've done both of the travel apps, I guess you would call them your and again, to my listeners who are cab drivers, yes, I'm a daughter of a cabbie, and I think that my dad would have actually enjoyed being a Lyft or Uber driver. But I am I kind of rely on these services, whether I am traveling, especially when I'm in Los Angeles. It's very scary to drive in Los Angeles. Or if I'm here, maybe I've had too much to drink, or it's just easier or more convenient for me to get a Lyft car. My code is Patricia098963. So that's my name, Patricia, or Patricia, whichever way you want to pronounce it. It's spelled the same. Patricia098963. And I'll post that on the Patty V Show page as well. And yeah, I get so you get a discount, and then I get a discount, and then you get a discount, I get a discount, and then once you get enough rides, you can also share your code with other people. It's a pyramid scheme.
Yeah, you should just do it. You know,
you should just do it.
Just put in the code.
Thanks, Oprah.
Everybody gets a prize.
Everybody. One more time. My name, Patricia, 098963.
That's awesome. By the way, we got a text a while ago. This was when we were talking about the spiritual topic. I don't know if you want me to try to
read
this. Yes, please. But belief in higher powers is a way for humankind to ease the fear of mortality. Ooh. Nothing more than a defense mechanism. There is no spiritual powers until humans evolved to a point where they could think in past, present, and future. Mm-hmm. Once we could think about the future, we needed to reassure ourselves that there was something after death. That is dark.
It's dark, but I think a lot of people would, and especially if you, I don't know how to explain this, Elliot, but I had a because I had several different religions growing up. I was Mormon, and then I was Lutheran. I was in search of spirituality, and I never for a moment doubted that there was a God. Like, that wasn't part of my experience. I always believed there was a God. I just wasn't sure about which religion would help me on my path. But in college, I had never met an atheist till I went to college. Like, it just wasn't part of my, or maybe I had, but no one told me they were. It wasn't something that people were very vocal about. Honestly, at the age of 19, it had never occurred to me there might not be a God. And that's a scary moment for people.
Yeah, well, it's the thing about religion. I think one of the best parables on religion itself is the movie The Invention of Lying, starring Ricky Gervais.
Okay.
If you hadn't seen it, it's the premise is it's a world where people have not been able to come up with saying anything but the absolute truth.
Right.
They are always truthful to each other. But Ricky Gervais's character is the first person to actually figure out how to lie, how to make up things. And because of that, he is able to kind of bend society to benefit him. But there's a moment, the reason it comes up is because there's a moment in the movie when he actually invents religion, a story about the afterlife that he says to his mother on her deathbed to comfort her before she goes into the next great adventure, as they say. And it's such a sweet moment, and it just so encapsulates what, like as you said, what kind of religion is for us. It's something that brings us comfort. It's something that helps us learn to come to terms with things that we can't understand.
Yes.
To me, I guess the one thing that I get frustrated the most with is when people want to take God, who is this infinite being that even the Bible says we can't understand, and yet They're almost literally putting God in a box. If a book is a box, you're saying this is the way God is, and this is the way you should understand it, and this is the way it should be, and that's what really alienates most people from religion.
Right? Is it in that because it's this way or no way? It is these within these, you know, as you said, in a box, these four walls of this, and it can't exist in any other sort of format, any other sort of reality. And it is and the other thing besides giving us comfort, a lot of people, you know, base the way. What's, I think, frustrating is when someone says, I behave this way because my religion tells me to, because I have to, whether it does seem like people use it as a way to inflict their, why do people want to inflict their own beliefs on others? That's the way I really think of it, is inflicting.
Yeah, I know. And this is like, there's a real kind of, it's difficult for me to talk about this because, I mean, again, I'm very open about it as far as the way religion is for me. And I make jokes about, like I made earlier in the show, like Yoda is my religion in a way. But it seems like when it comes to religion as mythology, if you treat it that way, kind of as a guide for character, that's one thing. But I hate to say this, and it's going to, I mean, I am a Christian, but I think about Superman more than I think about Jesus in some cases. You know, someone who grew up on comic books, because superheroes themselves are a lot of times moral guides for us. And
when you say think about them, you're not saying you worship them. You're saying you think about them. You reflect on what it means to be someone who will swoop in and help others.
And help others. And to me, it's like there's like this frustration I always have with people who talk about Superman. They go, well, Superman's like this big, they call him the big blue Boy Scout. And, you know, he's not as cool as Batman because Batman is dark and brooding.
And a billionaire,
right? But to me, I always like Superman because Superman does the right thing. And he doesn't do it because he gets anything for it. He does it because it's the right thing to do.
Right. It's not for revenge. It's not out of anger, which is a lot of what Batman operates on, right?
Yeah.
And rage.
And in some cases, he doesn't want anyone else to be a victim as well.
Right, that's true.
But then he goes around victimizing a lot of people. You know, I never understood why, if Bruce Wayne has all this money, if he wants to stop crime, he should really build community centers and schools. And that actually does better than dressing up as a bat and punching people. Mm. But anyway.
But we diverge.
But yeah, to me, religion, yeah, it's, if you want to make it a guide for character, that's one thing, for yourself to be a good person. But then if you take the slide rule that you use to judge yourself and apply it to other people, that's where the problem occurs.
Yeah. Well, I have a tough time. I'd rather have a conversation than tell someone that they're wrong. I guess I see the world as very cloudy. It's a little everything's a little bit different shades of gray. For me, nothing is black or white. That's why when I say,
I'm sorry. Every time someone gives me, one thing or the other.
That's why I always say false choices.
Shades of gray or black or white. I automatically go to Harrison Ford, Jack Ryan in a Patriot Games. It's not black or white. It's right and wrong. You know.
Ooh.
but it's true.
You know? Tom Clancy getting all in there.
Because Harrison Ford, Harrison Ford is my religion.
But who decides what's right or wrong? I guess we do. More after this on 720 WGN. I mean the collective we.
We didn't have time for it. We didn't have time to talk about it. It did not make the show. It had to go. Maybe next time. I don't know. This is the end of the show. We gotta go. The end of the show. Do-si-do.
I kind of like watching you dance while you're on the phone with a listener, Craig. That's probably one of my favorite things I've ever seen on the Allstate Showcase Studio in the glass of the producer's booth.
Well, Marco wanted to make comments about religion and stuff.
Oh, tell us, Marco. Can we grab him on? Let me grab him here. Marco, how's it going? Hey. What's going on?
Yeah, I was just going to add that principle of, well, I'll choose whatever works for me or whatever I think works for me only works so far. If you go into the doctor, he could be sued for malpractice if he said, well, you know, if you don't like chemotherapy for your cancer and you'd rather just take a spoonful of honey every day, you know, that's fine. Do whatever you think works for you.
Right.
You know, he wouldn't he wouldn't let. And I'm saying that there are certain things that are absolutes. There are certain things that have to be done in certain ways if you're going to get the cure you want. A lot of people have a misconception about Jesus, as far as I can read, and that is that in a lot of ways, he came to make things easier for people. In other words, he said to the people who listened to him, you know, the religious authorities have been piling all sorts of rules on you, and it's overburdening you, and why don't you come to me and get some rest? Right. I mean, that's essentially what he said. Come to me, all you who are... He was talking about the excessive regulations that were being piled on people that they couldn't remember anyway.
Right.
And he said, really, all you got to do is follow me. You don't need to remember a bunch of rules. All you need to do is follow me.
There you go. I think that's fair enough and a wonderful way to wrap up the conversation about religion. Thank you, Marco.
And remember, you might need chemo once in a while.
Fair enough. Or hopefully some elephant DNA.
Unless you're a Christian Scientist, but that's a different conversation for another day.
Absolutely. So what we meant to get to is now lasted 2 days. Craig, we did something new for yesterday. There was a big WGN party, and you and I both played whirly ball for the first time.
And I was not supposed to. And so I waited, and then eventually I did play.
And you were bribed into it.
I was.
Not bribed. True. You were told that should something go awry, because you're recovering.
I might be okay, yeah.
Well, you were told that they would take care of it for you financially.
There
was
booze and there was food, so I don't know if that was true, but hopefully I'm fine.
I broke the rink.
Yeah, you did.
I did. I broke
the ball.
I broke
the
ball. I broke the basket, and then I broke a wall. I did.
Which is a good strategy.
All that happened. I can't believe I didn't break the cart.
Well, Patty was playing. Her team wasn't exactly winning.
Oh, we were getting our butts kicked.
I had the Steve Bertrand on my team, who was amazing for some reason. So we did win. And so you had a good strategy, though, when you guys were down, just, break everything. Right.
I broke everything.
Throw it
everything.
Out. The game's over. Throw it out.
Yeah, what? We're all going to be stuck in this corner now. None of us know how to back up. I'm just going to keep going. Well, they kept hitting me, and then, finally the ledge broke. Then I drove over a ball, and then I broke my basket.
I'm picturing, little Patty Vasquez when she plays baseball against the older kids, taking the bats away if they're beating her by too many runs, being like, no,
look,
no
one gets to play.
Yeah.
Oh, look at
you
that.
Jerks.
Oh, look at you. Oh, there's no base. There's no second base. Oh, you can't even.
Can't do that
can't tag
anymore.
It up. Elliot and I had a lovely evening. A friend of the show, Heather Lally, had posted on Facebook earlier today. She had gone into her garden and picked the rest of her tomatoes, posted them on Facebook, and said, I'm thinking fried green tomatoes. And when someone does something like that, Elliot, do you ever post, what time should I be over? Right?
I do, but no one ever comes over.
So I posted, what time should I be over?
Yeah, and you did show up.
And I showed up. Yeah. I did, and I brought Elliot and Griffin, and Heather, who had never made fried green tomatoes, made an amazing batch. I feel bad.
I made half the batch.
You did.
I took over halfway through because you ladies were talking about important stuff, OB-GYN stuff, and saying how many times you can say vagina on the air.
Yeah.
And I'm serious. They were talking about that. They were show prep.
You've now already surpassed how many times I could say, and I have to do this.